This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On ABC Listen.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
About that to rev up your Friday. Has that put a rocket under you? That is, of course, Spiderbait. Last night inducted into the ARIA Hall of Fame. Have you seen Spiderbait play? Where? Did you see them play the Punters Club in the 90s? Hop on the line and tell me your Spiderbait stories. This is The Conversation Hour, and I'll be speaking to singer, songwriter, bass player Janet English about last night and the journey from the New South Wales Riverina to finding fame in Melbourne all the way to the ARIA Hall of Fame. Tell me your Spiderbait stories, your pick of their songs or albums, what the iconic punk rock indie band means to you. Spiderbait today. Also, how far have you travelled for sport and how much did you pay? Would you pay millions of dollars, say, more than 2.8 million? That's how much one ticket for the World Cup final is being sold for on the resale platform. One. It's behind the goal as well, by the way. Yes, the World Cup has, of course, kicked off in all of its glory and its excesses. We'll cross to San Francisco to see what the vibe is there. And yes, we'll talk crazy tickets, also that deep mix of passion and politics that World Cups always bring, don't they? But maybe this one more than most. Tell me, what's the furthest you've ever travelled for sport? Or the most you've paid? I'd love to hear your best trips to see sport, maybe even your worst trips to see sport. Let me know all about it. First, though, we will be talking Spiderbait later and the World Cup as well. And very soon, we'll be talking about the enormous class action launched here in Victoria that could reap billions of dollars from the chemical manufacturing giant 3M over the disastrous legacy left by the forever chemicals that we do know now as PFAS.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
That new class action very, very soon, but I'm asking you for your trips. How far have you gone? What have you done? Hi, Samantha in Abbotsford. What's your story?
Oh, hi, Mary. I travelled, my son was over in Denmark on an exchange program, and I travelled over to visit him. And we were in Copenhagen on, it was the summer solstice and Australia was playing Denmark. And so we were sitting on a sidewalk cafe or a bar watching the game, and the only Australians. And when Miele scored the equaliser, I think it was, I don't know if it was just before the end of the first half, Cooper and I let out this big cheer, and everybody sort of turned and looked at us and then gave us a big cheer because we were, you know, there on our own. So,
oh, the Danes are so nice. Did we win? Yeah. Can you remember? That was the decider.
It was an equal, a draw. Yeah, so.
But what a great memory.
So, I know. Yeah. And you and I travelled overseas together as AFS students.
You're the Samantha. Hey, Samantha, thanks for calling. Yes, talking of great trips, yes, for everyone listening, Samantha was an AFS traveller like me several decades ago now.
Yes, we said goodbye in Zagreb and then went off to our different countries.
And lovely to talk to you and to hear also that you have shared those travel genes with your son as well.
Yes.
All right. Going to this one, Samantha?
No,
World Cup?
I don't.
No?
USA doesn't interest me at the moment.
Okay. Samantha, we will talk. And do you have a story like Samantha's? 1300-222-774 is the number to call to tell me about those great sporting trips. How far have you gone? How much have you spent? Of course, we're talking about that in the context of the World Cup. We'll get to that in this conversation hour. But first, you may well have heard about the federal government recently saying that they're claiming $2 $1 billion in litigation against 3M, the chemical manufacturing giant, over PFAS contamination on Defence Force bases. Well, this is different. This is news today that could be dwarfed by a new class action from hundreds of businesses and organisations, Victorian businesses, in the Victorian Supreme Court against 3M over PFAS. And as I say, it could run into the billions of dollars multiple. A reminder that 3M has said that it will defend itself against both the federal government claims and the class action claims as well. Joining me now is Frederick Lusch, who is Professor of Environmental Science at Griffith University. Thanks for joining me, Frederick.
Good morning, Mary.
What did you think when you read this news of this new class action? Did it surprise you?
It's really not surprising. I mean, we've seen many, many more class actions in the recent decades, in particular on PFAS. We've seen some in the U.S. There was a settlement a few years back of $10 billion for a class action lawsuit in the U.S. We've seen some likewise class action lawsuits in Europe. So it's just us catching up.
Indeed. I believe there were tens of billions of dollars settled in the US. So it seems like, as you say, Australia is just catching up with this. Are we late to the party?
We're a bit late. I mean, the first class action lawsuits, well, the first lawsuits on PFAS were in as far back as 1999. I think there's a movie on it called Dark Waters too.
Oh, yeah.
It's 27 years in the making, I suppose.
Yeah. And so 3M has said it's going to defend itself. What has been the defense in previous cases?
I'm not on the lawyer side of things, but look, my understanding is with PFAS, demonstrating harm is really the area that's quite difficult because we've done a lot of studies on animals at fairly high doses, and we know the kinds of effects that they can do. The big question mark is what we're exposed to generally in the general public are not those high doses that we test in animal studies, are much, much lower doses. And in toxicology, there's a very famous paradigm that says the dose makes the poison. And the easiest way to think about that is, let's think about salt, right? A bit of salt, you sprinkle a little bit of salt on your fries, yum, yum, enjoyable fries. If you emptied the whole salt shaker, you'd need to call an ambulance quickly because things are going to turn really badly. So the dose makes the poison. And I think that's really where all those lawsuits, when we start talking about health effects, get really tricky. Because demonstrating health effects in humans at low doses is really difficult.
Mm. You're listening to Frederick Lusch, who is Professor of Environmental Science at Griffith University, and we're talking about a new class action against 3M by Victorian businesses. So we are talking about that effect that you're saying that PFAS has had on the environment. And yes, it's notable that this class action is being conducted by businesses or organisations that have owned sites where those products were used or where they've migrated onto, but not about individuals' health, because even our own Centre for Disease Control is advising we just can't make that link at the moment.
That's right. That's right. And I mean, I think the link we can make is one of association, not causation. So a really simple way to think about it, and it's very simplistic, and it takes so much out of the equation, but it's a nice way to think about it. Let's say you were walking down the street, you heard some shouting, and then you turned around and you saw someone injured on the sidewalk. You might go, oh my goodness, the shouting injured this person. Mm-hmm. No, the shouting happened at the same time, but the fact that the car hit them is the reason they're injured, right? And that's the problem when we're looking at environmental contaminants. We're exposed to so many, many different things in our daily lives. Car exhaust, cigarette smoke from the person next door, pesticides in our residues, in our food, industrial chemicals left, right, and center. I mean, PFAS, have been used in such an incredible array of applications, from nonstick cookware to stain repellent fabric to, firefighting foams, etc. So they're everywhere. And demonstrating that a person's cancer is because of that exposure to that single chemical is really, really difficult. Mm. But that's where the lawsuits are actually quite, I think, smart. Again, with the caveat that I'm not a lawyer, mm-hmm. but I understand this approach being quite smart, is that it isn't about health effects, it's about the cost of remediation, which is a lot easier to demonstrate, obviously, because you've paid for that remediation.
Mm. And yes, we should note that even when 3M has settled in the US for, I think, $14 billion Australian, they said that's not an admission of liability. It is, though, of course, a very important thing to note. Frederick, what is the current state of use of PFAS, whether it's in Australia or globally?
So, look, PFAS is a different topic because we're focused very, very much on two specific PFAS, PFOS, P-F-O-S, and PFOA. But PFAS is a class of chemicals with, you know, more than 10,000 different chemicals in there. And so we've seen some of the industry wind back and shut down production on PFOA and PFOS early on. But many of the other PFAS, they've continued producing many of the other PFAS until today, until recently. I think I recently saw that 3M in particular, so I don't want to finger them, there are a few different companies that produce them, but 3M has said they were stopped producing PFAS from 2025 onwards. And look, I think this is one of the great changes that we've seen in society. Looking back in the last 50 years, we've really started to hold accountable the companies that produce these toxic chemicals, especially when they know they're doing it. Like, I mean, mistakes can happen, sure, but if you know your product is toxic and you keep selling it and benefiting from it, there should be a big penalty, right?
We're talking about PFAS on the Conversation Hour. This is 774 ABC Melbourne and Victoria. You're listening to Frederick Lusch, who's from Griffith University. Frederick, when you talk about this being obviously a burgeoning legal industry, if you like, do you foresee the science actually one day making a link to humans and therefore opening, whether it's 3M or any other company, up to this sort of action?
Look, I think so. Again, with the big caveat that we're talking about a very large class of chemical compounds, each one of which has likely very different impacts and effects. But I think a really interesting change that happened in 2023 in Sweden is the high courts there declared that you didn't necessarily need to demonstrate an adverse effect. All you needed to be able to demonstrate is an increased concentration in your blood or in your body of those PFAS. So that's kind of taking a step forward and saying, look, there's still going to be question marks around what exactly are the effects, but if you can demonstrate you've been exposed and your concentrations are higher, that's the benchmark. So I think that changes the story quite dramatically.
Mm. Frederick, thank you so much for stepping us through it today.
My pleasure. And Black Betty for Spider Bait, by the way.
Oh, you're a fan? Did you see them?
I'm a fan, but I love that song.
Excellent. Maybe we should get that up for Frederick Lusch. Thank you, Frederick Lusch. He's Professor of Environmental Science at Griffith University. Yes, I am asking you, what's your pick of Spiderbait song or album or that experience of seeing them? We are very soon going to be joined by Janet English. I'm very excited about that. Already some texts coming in saying someone was in one of Spiderbait's film clips years ago. Also met Cram, great guy. That was Rita from South Yarra. Tell me your stories about Spiderbait. Also, I am asking you today, how far have you travelled for sport? How much have you paid? And we're talking about the World Cup's eye-watering prices. Hey, Jeff in Bendigo, where have you travelled to?
I travelled to Shanghai, and I went over there to see St Kilda play against Port Adelaide. I think there was a time when... Yeah, so, and that was pretty exciting. Unfortunately, we failed to win. and I also travelled to Wellington twice when the Saints played in Wellington, and again, no luck. But at least travelling to Shanghai, we did get the opportunity to travel around China as well, so that was a bit of a bonus.
Well, that's the right. Go for the sports, stay for the culture, I guess. Those things stay with you. Will you do it again, Jeff?
I would, yes. In fact, I had planned to go back the following year because the Saints were scheduled to play, but of course COVID hit, and China was the last place you wanted to be travelling to when COVID had occurred.
Exactly. Look, Jeff, good. Thank you for calling and good luck with trying to on the next one.
I have to add Crowded House to the list of musicians that need to be inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Are they not? I didn't realise that.
Well, maybe they are. I'm not aware that they are, though. Maybe
okay.
They are.
Jeff, yeah. Great to have you vote.
I'll go for Black Betty as well.
Black Betty. Two votes for Black Betty. Tell me what your best spider bait song is. Yes, because very soon, I'm very pleased to say I'll be joined by Janet English about spider bait. Tell me your, from spider bait, tell me your spider bait stories and also your great sports trip stories as we continue on the Conversation Hour.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is the Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Top shelf human beings, all three of you are awesome. It is my great honour to induct these beautiful humans and adored friends into the ARIA Hall of Fame.
I think there was something beeped out of there, but yes, that happened last night. Iconic band Spiderbait was one of six acts inducted into the Hall of Fame. And joining me now, very happy to say, is Janet English. Of course, songwriter, singer, bass player, legend. Thank you so much for joining me, Janet, after possibly a late
thank
night.
You. Thank you, Mary. Yeah, not a lot of sleep. Thank you so much.
What was last night like? You closed out the night.
We did. Oh, like... It's a weird experience, like, you know, when you're in the middle of the storm, to have looked from the outside and seen our journey would be really different. But when you're in the middle of it, you forget, like, what it meant to people and how much it meant to people. And it was so humbling. I was really overwhelmed and had a couple of cries. We all did. We all did. It was beautiful.
Oh, that's so wonderful to hear. So, yeah, was that... What was going through your head as you were walking up to get that induction?
It's the thing that, you know, as a kid you kind of fantasize about, like, you know, oh, when I win an Oscar I'll say this, or when I, you know, do this or that. But at the time you're kind of a bit stunned and a bit like, is this really happening? Is this actually happening right now?
You thought of the kid in Finley?
Yeah. I thought back. Well, all of us thought about where we came from and how we began, and you know, how were we here? It was just such a wild ride.
Let's talk about that ride. You are listening to Janet English on the Conversation Hour. We are talking about finally the induction into the Hall of Fame for ARIA. While we've got you, Lucien has joined us from Forest Hill. Lucien, hi. You're a Spiderbait fan.
Very much so. I discovered them about 10 or 15 years, put them on my ring as by a ringtone.
Which song?
The Black Betty.
Ah, that wakes you up.
Black Betty. And it's raised a few eyebrows in meetings when I forgot to mute my phone.
And do you just tell them to get with it, Lucien? Just join the dots, get into it.
Thank you.
Lucien, thank you. I love to think of Spiderbait making its way into some of those corporate meetings. When you think, and you've talked obviously last night and beyond, Janet, about your influence on people, Spiderbait's often mentioned as one of the most influential bands. Well, how do you feel about that?
Well, just to be a part of that same journey, I think of the bands that influence us. And the shows that we went to see, because we left this little country town and came to Melbourne. And I guess we were just there at the best time. It was sort of the late 80s and a lot of listeners were there, people who went to see Mudhoney at the Old Greek Theatre or, you know, were at the corner for all those all-ages shows when they were kids like we were. Seeing the Meanies and the Cosmic Psychos and all of those kind of bands. You know, it was just such an explosion of amazing music.
Mm. Yeah, so, I'm seeing so many texts come in. Text me or call me with your stories about spider bait. People are talking about the big day out and some of the clubs around Melbourne. Talk to me about the days of playing at the Punters and really plying your trade here in Melbourne. You've come from the country, you're making your way. What was it like those days?
It was very much just like all the share houses of North Fitzroy and Fitzroy. Everyone had a band playing in their lounge room, kind of between uni, you know, classes. And so there was no idea that you would go on and, you know, achieve success or do anything with it. It was just a real social thing. It was a big community and it was very inclusive. It was very diverse and everyone was welcome. Mm. There were a lot of really powerful and strong women voices within that crew. So it was a really lovely time, actually. It was really nice. Mm.
And I read, I think it was you who said, it was you who said in a piece about spider bait that you didn't expect anything would ever happen and then Nirvana happened and it all went bonkers. Did it seem like that at the time? That it was just, whoa.
It really did, because there was this sort of like, you know, 80s mainstream was like hair metal and all this kind of like really glossy pop stuff. And then underneath Bubbling Away, you know, these like bands were playing and we didn't really expect anyone from the sort of outer burbs to ever know about it. And then, and I guess there was the, it was just like Triple J went national at that very time. Mm. And Nirvana just broke through, as did Silverchair. And suddenly the world was kind of scrambling to have this music that just kicked down those doors and simplified everything again and spoke to them in a way that, yeah, maybe the, you know, the music before hadn't. In the same way punk did, like in the 70s, I suppose.
It just, yeah, absolutely.
And it was cathartic and energetic and fun and, you know. It kind of got a bit macho in the end, but
really?
At the time. Well,
you mean the whole vibe?
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever seen that Woodstock 99 documentary, but the whole kind of new metal thing eventually, you know, it got so big and it got like the heaviness of it kind of got teamed with, you know, being aggressive. But before that, it wasn't like that. It was really about catharsis and fun and listening to energetic music and... Yeah.
Even the snippet that we played, I'm sure, has made everyone's Friday a bit better. And don't worry, we're going to play a bit more. We're getting lots and lots of votes for what to play as well. Matt in Boronia, what are your stories of following spider bait?
I've followed spider bait since the, early mid-90s? They were the first band I ever went and saw.
Oh, wow.
It was at the Palace with Tumbleweed and the Meanies.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful.
And I just remember seeing you guys, I was standing up the top watching you guys playing and just had to get down in the crowd and behave like a bit of a lunatic.
Perfect. Matt, you've got Janet on the line. What do you want to say to her after all these years of following and thinking about that young lad going berserk?
Oh, look, I absolutely love your music. I still play Sha Sha Baglava very, very often. It's one of my favourite albums of all time. And, yeah, you make me smile every time I put your music on.
Oh, thank you. That means heaps to me. That's so lovely.
Thank you, Matt. And and we'll talk about this in a second, but they're still touring. You got plans to see them next month?
I have now.
You have to now. You'll have to go down and go berserk in front of Janet again.
I'll have to. I'll be the tall, skinny guy that's sort of nearly 50 years old down the bottom.
Oh, I think most you won't people be the like only one.
Now, wouldn't they? No, yeah. I guess you would not. No.
Matt, thank you. I think you've just elevated yourself to supervan status there. We're talking with Janet English from Spider Bait, which has finally been inducted into the ARIA Hall of Fame. Just so we're here now, we're in Melbourne, Nirvana's happened, it's all taken off, but then Shazam made it into an episode of Sex and the City. Tell me about that, how that all came to happen and what happened after that. Was that just a whole new level?
That was fantastic. Like one of my favourite shows of all time. you know, there's those pinch me moments where you just, yeah, it's is this happening? and seeing the episodes. Even now, I still get goosebumps thinking about that.
How did that happen?
I think, like, the music producer over there heard our stuff somehow and liked it and thought it was perfect for a catwalk scene, which it just is perfect for that.
Yeah. And you were saying there was another moment as well?
Oh, when Heath Ledger got 10 Things I Like About You.
Oh, 10 Things I Hate About You, is that one?
I Hate About You, yeah. Sorry, yes. They used Calypso in that as well. And so lots of people know us in America for those songs. So they're often just these random ways that people find us, which is really lovely.
Fantastic. They are gifts from whatever gods are looking down when it comes to those sort of opportunities. Charlotte in Greensboro, what has Spiderbait meant to you?
Spiderbait are just a groundbreaking band and such a big part of my musical life growing up, particularly in the 90s. I saw them live at various festivals, was super, super excited when Buy Me A Pony took out the top spot in the Hottest 100. That was a huge thing for an Australian act. And, just recently my teenage daughter discovered 10 Things I Hate About You, and I was just thrilled to be able to go, listen, that's Calypso, that's Spiderbait, they're an Australian band. That was so exciting.
Do you want to say anything to Janet? She's on the line, Charlotte.
Oh, I love it. Janet. I love how your kids come to you and say, hey, have you ever heard of, like, The Doors? Or, you know, like, it's like, yeah, I have. I was there. Yeah.
It's an amazing thing to be able to share that with teenagers and go, yep, music was cool then too.
Yes, I was cool once, I promise.
We've been there. We've done
Janet,
that.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, Charlotte, thank you. Thank you for sharing the memories as well. Janet, I hope you can bask really, really in this this feeling for a long time. And also you're able to share that in real life next month. You're still touring and you're such powerhouses when you're live. The fire's obviously still there. The energy's still there.
Yeah, I mean, we're just so lucky to do this. We're, you know, this is just a dream come true for us. We need a little bit of a nana nap maybe before in the afternoon, but these days we're getting there.
You know what? That's going to be of comfort to a lot of people listening to this.
Some of the really early stuff is so fast, like, and playing it is like, you know, we were athletes at the time, so that it's challenging. It takes a little bit of work.
Have you had to adapt any, or do you just move a bit less?
we try our hardest. We really do. We're rehearsing at the moment, trying to get it all up to speed. So it'll be fun.
Maybe you start back Black Betty really slowly, and then just make it faster and faster.
Yes, there's an idea.
So that is the Ivy and the Big Apple's 30th anniversary tour. Where's it going to take you, Janet? It's at least Melbourne, we know.
Oh yeah, all around Australia.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yes, so many places, and super excited because that record in particular meant a lot for a lot of people, as it did for us. So, yeah, can't wait.
Janet, thank you so much for everything you've done, obviously. Congratulations on that induction. And, yeah, thank you so much for sharing the joy here on The Conversation Hour.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mary. I love you. I listen to you all the time.
Oh.
Thank you.
Okay. That's given me a bit of shivers. Thank you, Janet. That's
Talk
Janet.
Soon.
Talk soon. That'd be great. Maybe we can pick up Janet after the tour or during the tour. That'd be fantastic to talk again. So many texts coming in. Spiderbait, they warm my Gen X heart. First live gig I ever saw as an adult under my own steam in the early 90s in Ballarat. Love them still. Lots of memories from the big day out and the Corner Hotel for the 20th anniversary of the release of Ivy and the Big Apple. Still amazing. Yes, this is the 30th anniversary tour now. Also, back in my high school days, two of our crazy mates headed on a road trip to finish the to visit the unfinished Spanish galleon at Finlay Lake. Crazy guys, but had the time of their lives on the pilgrimage. And this from Pete in Ballarat, who's saying Janet English is one of Australia's great songwriters. Stevie is a brilliant pop song. Out of My Head is blisteringly great. Glockenpop is chef's kiss, beautiful music. Spiderbait's catalogue is so much wider than Buy Me a Pony and Black Betty. Yes, you are correct, Pete from Ballarat, but I have to say, in an unscientific summing up of this text line, I think that we're going to have to play, if not at least for our first caller, Jeff, everyone who has nominated Black Betty. It's a cover, but yes, go back and look at all the originals. Revisit and relive those memories with Spiderbait. Keep those stories coming. We will hopefully get to more throughout this conversation hour. Also, I'm asking you, how far have you travelled for sport? How much did you pay? Tell me about the best, maybe even the worst trips to see sport, because we are talking about the World Cup. Yes, not just the football, of course, and the politics, but also crazy prices, everything that's happening over there in the World Cup. We'll cross next to San Francisco.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
On The Conversation Hour, we will talk about all of the politics that is always running through the World Cup, but also about the passion and the vibe on the ground. Here to give us an insight is David Mark, who is lucky enough to be there in San Francisco. Yes, I'm jealous of your gig, David Mark. How are you going? What's it like?
Yeah, hi, Mary. It's good. Well, at the moment, just to give you a bit of idea of the glamour and the romance, I'm standing around in a car park watching a black cyclone fence with the Socceroos training behind it.
Gig that comes with it. You know, they're the less glamorous parts, David Mark, but surely you're going to get to see a little bit of football?
Yeah, I will. Well, we're actually flying to Vancouver tomorrow, so the Socceroos are playing their first match against Turkey it'll be Sunday morning Australian time, about 5 o'clock in Melbourne. Saturday night in Vancouver. So that's their first World Cup match against Turkey, and they're obviously they're having a closed session today, so it's really getting towards the pointy end. But it's interesting you asked me that question, what's the vibe like? Mm. So it's been kind of interesting. So we've been in San Diego. The Socceroos played a World Cup warm-up match there against Switzerland. It's not a World Cup city. There's a lot of Mexicans there, though, so they are obviously super excited about the World Cup. And then we've sort of been in San Francisco, well, Oakland specifically. The Socceroos are training in Oakland across the bay from San Francisco. And, there's not a lot to say that there's a World Cup happening,
Really?
Not many signs around and things like that. But this morning we went into San Francisco to go to a live site to watch the opening match between Mexico and South Africa, which, of course, Mexico won 2-0. And that was fantastic because there are about 3,000 or 4,000 Mexican fans there, all in their Mexican shirts, and they were just loud and passionate. And we suddenly went, okay, finally, we've been talking about this for such a long time. It's finally started, and here's a bit of vibe. It's great.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it's across three countries, as we know, and there's so much going on in America at the moment. Football, of course, is like the World Cup is a huge event, but how much are everyday Americans really acknowledging it's there? It's at the same time as the NBA playoffs,
Yes.
It's just jostling for a bit of attention.
Yeah, look, it is. But, I mean, if you talk to anyone, they're excited about it. You can't help but know it is on, obviously. And so there's been such a build-up. So, people are talking about it. People are excited. There are little things in the hotels. And I think now that it's started, it's really sort of going to kick off in terms of the end, the actual sort of fervour. And there's a lot of, obviously, United States, where we've been, is, one of the home teams. And there's a huge amount of interest in the United States team, and they all think they're going to go through, and Australia is an easy beat and all that sort of stuff. So that's kind of interesting. But, you know, this World Cup is so big, Mary. It's so big. I mean, you get like three nations, so Mexico, Canada, United States, 16 cities. It's going for 39 days.
Crazy.
There's 104 matches. It's just, which is 40 more matches than any previous World Cup. So it's just epic on sort of a scale that's sort of unimaginable, you know, compared to any previous tournament.
It's true that I think that at the end of every World Cup, even for people, you know, who are dipping in every 4 years, they still miss it when it's gone. So it feels like this is the 2026 answering of that question. Okay, we'll make it keep going then.
That's right. And it's FIFA, right? FIFA runs the thing. And do they want more matches? Do they want more income? Yes, they do.
And
so
more money.
This is what we've got.
Well, this is what we've been talking about. And I'd love to hear from you. How much money would you spend on a ticket or to travel to see sport? 1300 222 774 is the number to call. I'd love to hear all of your best and maybe worst trips to go and see some sport. Because, Dave, we've been talking about the cost of tickets. I believe it's done on a bit of a surge system, like a ride-shared ride where, you know, according to demand, the price goes up. And I believe on a resale site, $2.8 million Australian bucks on one ticket.
Try 15 million on one ticket.
What?
Someone's trying to sell a ticket to the final for $15 million Australian.
Is it on the pitch? is worth 15 million?
Tickets to play the game. I don't know. And I don't know if they might have lowered the price. Maybe they were asking a bit too much. But yeah, the tickets.
Are ordinary people feeling like they can go?
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, I've sort of spoke to a lot of people in Australia and I know people who are going. It's been incredibly hard to get a ticket. I mean, there are about 7 million tickets available for the World Cup. They had 500 million applications. The prices were just crazy. I mean, FIFA talks a good talk about, you know, the people's game and offering cheap tickets, but the reality was there were actually very, very few of those. And because of the sort of the pricing mechanism, the prices started to go up into the thousands very quickly. And then, you know, they were obviously well subscribed, and then they go into that resale market you were telling people about. Now, the thing about the resale market is you buy a ticket, it's essentially, it allows you to scalp them, you know. FIFA then will take 15% of the price of the resale ticket from the seller and the buyer. So in other words, they make 30% on top of the cover face value of the ticket that they already got. So, I mean, it's a crazy system and people are charging exorbitant amounts of money, you know, tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars to tickets for the final. You can still get tickets sort of in the hundreds for the group games. So it is possible. But, you know, I was talking to one friend who, you know, was planning the trip of a lifetime and he only managed to get one ticket to one Socceroos match. So he's going to go and watch Australia play Paraguay in San Jose. But then he ended up forking out, I think it was around $1,500 to go to one knockout match. And, you know, obviously he doesn't know who it is, but he was prepared to do that because he's spending all this money to come all this way, all those airfares, you know, the cost of accommodation. Yeah, it's a huge expense.
It is a huge expense. John from Essendon, you've made a lengthy trip for sport?
Yes, good morning. The most I've spent, and I've been to grand finals and everything, was the 2004 opening night of the Athens Olympics.
Oh, wow.
That was about €980 for the seat, which is close enough to $2,000 and throw in all your other expenses. But having a Greek background and seeing Greece come out and Australia, you know, in the opening night, the birthplace of the Olympics from 776 BC, we were just trembling and had tears all night in our eyes. It was just so emotional.
Oh, so definitely worth the cost, John, and the trip.
Oh, worth every cent, yeah.
Oh, that's terrific. John, do you remember much more other than that opening night? Did you get to see a lot while you were there?
Yeah, we went and saw a fair few games. Just saw Australia playing soccer and a couple of track and field events and just the whole buzz of the city. It was just unbelievable, you know, being summer. And Greece that year had won the Euro, you know, when they were a rank outsider. Holy, just scraped in and won the Euro that year, which was unbelievable. So Greece was on a high the whole year. So you know, there was a real buzz around the city and flocked with tourists and many, many Australians that I bumped into.
Yeah, that really does show that those sporting trips can just combine so many great feelings and memories. Thank you, John. We're talking to David Mark from ABC Sport, who's lucky enough, Duck, to get this gig in San Francisco for the World Cup. And Dave, before I let you go, you managed to catch up with Tony Popovich. What's the mindset of the Socceroos coach as we speak?
He's pretty calm, Mary. Mm. Like, I mean, it was good to have a bit of a, it was a sit down sort of chat. So it was good to, I mean, didn't have that long with him, but it was good to have a chat about, you know, like his time as a Socceroo, because he was on the pitch in 2005 when Australia beat Uruguay to qualify, and we remember those amazing moments. Mm. So he played in that match, and then he played in the 2006 World Cup. So it was just really good to talk to him about, you know, like what the Socceroos, it sounds, you know, it's a bit of a cliche, what do they mean to you? But obviously it means a hell of a lot, because he was with that side for a long time, and now he's going to become the first ever Australian to play and coach at a World Cup. So he's making history. He's really quietly confident. I mean, it's interesting. It's a very young team, Mary. There's only 9 players who've played in previous World Cup. And so we've got all this exciting young talent like Nestor Iraconda, Mo Touré, Jordi Bosz, who are all 22, 23. But, you know, even some of the older players like Jackson Irvine is like, they're fast, you know, they're strong. So Popovich has this real belief, you know, he talks it up all the time, you know, why can't we be the team that goes further than any other Australian side, you know? Mm. We're not here to make up the numbers. And, you know, and I said, like, that's your motto, do the players believe it? And he said, yeah, they do. They absolutely do. So it's kind of permeated through the squad. Having that belief is one thing, putting it into practice is another thing, but you know, there's been some really encouraging signs in the recent practice matches. So I think there people should have a fair deal of confidence in what the Socceroos can do. And I think they're sort of being underrated, written off to a certain extent by a lot of the pundits in their group. Mm-hmm. They've got the USA, Turkey and Paraguay. So, yeah, it's going to be a fun tournament, and it is going to be really interesting to see how far the Socceroos can go.
Well, quickly, just to put you on the spot, David Mark, how far do you reckon they're going to get?
I think they will get through the group, and then it's in the lap of the gods. I mean, there are 6 possible permutations. They could finish on top of the group, they could finish last, but there are literally 6 possible permutations. Like, because in this World Cup, 8 of the 12 third place teams go through. And so, like, yeah, if they finish on top and if they get a bit of a run, or if they finish second, they've got that confidence, then, you know, they've got a good chance of going. But it's really that, who knows what happens in sport, Mary. Once you get on a roll, anything can happen.
Well, I'll allow you being slippery on this, David Mark. If you'll promise, hopefully you'll answer my call and we can catch up with you through the rest of the unending months
absolutely.
That are continuing for the World Cup.
39 days.
39 days. Thank you. That is David Mark from ABC Sport, reporting live from us in a San Francisco car park. But, of course, we'll get to see some of the glamour and the passion as well of the World Cup. You're listening to The Conversation Hour on 774 ABC Melbourne and Victoria. We're also asking you, how far would you go for a sporting trip? Barry in Kyneton, how far did you go?
We went from Melbourne to Edmonton in Alberta, Canada. I played in the Masters Golf in 2005.
Oh, you didn't just go to watch, you went to play.
Yeah, so it was part of a... When the Commonwealth Games were on in Melbourne in 2003, they were promoting Edmonton, and we decided that we'd go, and we combined it with a scenic trip around Canada at the time after the golf. And from there, we stayed in Edmonton for about 10 days playing golf and doing a bit of sightseeing.
Oh, that's fantastic. Would you do it again, Barry?
I did play golf, but it was somewhere down in Melbourne, I think, later years. So
yeah, well, still travelling, isn't it, I guess, from Kyneton?
Yeah, I have played golf in UK when we're visiting our family.
Oh, it's always good to play sport when you go. And, of course, golf can take you to some beautiful places. Barry, thank you so much for calling in. And we've also obviously been paying tribute to Spiderbait Steve in Bendigo. You're a fan?
Yeah, g'day.
Yeah, very hi. Yeah, what do you remember?
The one thing I remember, definitely Ivy and the Big Apples, as I was starting my uni career, leaving home. I grew up around Shepparton, so the fact that Spiderbait kind of hailed from the country area kind of spoke to me a little bit. And Janet was just one of those iconic female musicians, you know, like a Susie DiMarchi, that was pretty exciting to kind of listen to, as you say, like her lyric ability and so forth was pretty cool.
Absolutely. That's a really good comparison there, Steve. She was also so humble as well that I picked up in that. Yeah.
Yeah, just that the personality kind of shown through, just that someone who, you know, you could sit down and have a beer with her. It seems like someone you could easily get along with.
Absolutely. Steve, thank you. Are you going to go see them while they're touring next month?
I definitely would think about it again. I got to see them at a Day on the Green a fair few years ago, and it was fantastic to want to get to see them live.
Yeah.
And on your other theme at the moment about travelling, we didn't travel on purpose, but we did happen to be in Europe on a Kentucky tour around the time of the 2002 FIFA Cup. And funnily enough, we were in Dublin when Ireland were playing someone, and it was a fantastic experience.
Oh, I bet. And so, sorry, you were on a cruise, did you say?
On a Kentucky tour.
On a Kentucky tour. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you can get some great friendships out of that, but also potentially some sporting rivalries, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Steve, thank you so much for calling in. Yes, we are still taking your calls on the great sporting trips and also paying tribute to Spiderbait, but also we are talking about the World Cup. And look, politics is always part of World Cup, and it's certainly been part of this one even before the first ball was kicked this morning. Dr. Greg Yochim is lecturer of sports management in Swinburne University. Hello, Greg. Tell me, is this everything and more you could want as an expert in sport and potentially politics of sport?
Well, certainly there's plenty to unpack, more with every passing hour.
Yes. Well, tell me, let's go back to everything that's going through. We've got immigration restrictions, visa controversies, we've got you know, human rights groups. We've got FIFA's relationship with Donald Trump. And then this is a small matter of the US, one of the hosts, actually engaging in war with one of the participants of the teams. What out of this grab bag of political sort of maelstrom would you pick out as one of the most notable for 2026?
Well, the thing that makes this particular mega event particularly notable is the fact that we have a U.S. president in Donald Trump who was given the inaugural 2025 FIFA Peace Prize at the end of last year. Mm. And as you just rightly noted, the United States is currently still conducting strikes in Iran, even as the Iranian team is in North America preparing to compete on the pitch, and all of their matches are in the United States. And so more so than when we've seen historical examples in the past of sport being used as a political tool, in this instance, we actually have FIFA more or less getting in bed, and it's a bed that they made with Trump. And so the contradictions are just popping up everywhere, and that's what makes this particularly unique.
Mm. And it is a truism that all World Cups are political, ipso facto, all sport is political in one sense. But given what we've seen with that close relationship between Gianni Infantino and President Trump, where, you know, they've given them the Peace Prize, they've cooperated on a lot of things, do you feel that this is potentially an inflection point for not just the World Cup itself, but for the reputation of FIFA?
I would have to think that it is. And FIFA keeps coming to inflection points like this. And so it suddenly becomes a question of how much longer will this go, and how much can they get away with? You know, the World Cup is one of the biggest sporting events next to the Olympics in the world. Every time it occurs, the Men's and Women's World Cup, everyone's talking about it. And soccer is the most popular sport in the world by participation and viewership. And so all eyes are always going to be in that direction. And so there's a lot of scrutiny on FIFA in the past with bribes, when Sepp Blatter was the president, for example. And now with Infantino very much crossing boundaries into that political realm that probably the organization should not be doing.
Mm. And yet, no doubt, the play has started. We'll all get distracted. What do you think will be the level of interest in those, you know, more weighty matters during the World Cup? I mean, it's going to continue. The war is still continuing. What do you expect over the next 39 days?
Well, I think that you're right to say that the headlines will move on. And that's kind of been the track record with Trump, full stop, is there's just always something new and a lot of distraction and white noise distracting us from what we want to be talking about or thinking about. And history, unfortunately, shows us that the world moves on. If we go back just one installment of the Men's World Cup to 2022 in Qatar, there were reports, some as high as 6,500 migrant labor deaths could be connected to the infrastructure projects, building the stadia, in some cases, almost entire new cities that were required to host that event. And the event went off and the matches were played and a champion was crowned and the world more or less moved on. But in a non-zero number of deaths, you would think that that would continue to dictate the conversation, but unfortunately it hasn't.
I guess given that it is becoming more more entwined with US domestic politics, which unfortunately is gets much more attention in the media than, for instance, some of those countries that you're talking about and some of those issues that you're talking about, is it possible that, you know, FIFA's may have gone one step too far when it comes to avoiding some of that spotlight between World Cups?
I think so, and there are some reports, some FIFA officials speaking anonymously, of course, not wanting to go on the record, but talking about, for example, deep internal embarrassment at the fact that they gave Trump this Peace Prize last year, and now here we are with the Men's World Cup about to kick off and everything is happening, and you know, it's the irony of the Peace Prize with the situation in Iran. Yeah, it's very unfortunate. So,
FIFA, Greg, do we have any idea of who might get the next Peace Prize?
I wouldn't even know where to begin to guess.
Greg, it'd be great to keep in touch with you as this very long tournament goes on, because no doubt there will be some political flashpoints. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Dr. Greg Wakim, who is the lecturer in sports management at Swinburne. We're talking about how far you'd travel. This from Charlie. Clearly a wag in Mornington. Furthest I ever travelled for sport was Waverley Park. And also we've been talking about spider bait. Wonderful, great night seeing spider bait at the ESPY many years ago. They locked the doors after midnight from memory, but either way, it was wild. Thank you so much for listening to me on the Conversation Hour. Have a wonderful weekend.